Happy New Year from the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cummerton on this wonderful evening, the 31st of December. If you're not out partying, it's time to get ready to go out, but you can't go yet. You have to wait for another hour until I'm finished. Then you can go out and you can ring in the new year. But in the meantime, we're going to tell you and have Hogmanay, some of the traditions of Scotland, explained to you. I had the opportunity of talking to Hugh Boyle about the traditions of Hogmanay, a Scottish tradition. But before we go and talk to Hugh Boyle, I have to fill you in a few details. This programme is coming from downtown Ottawa. It's the only Irish radio programme broadcasting in the National Capital Region. And we are streaming live on the internet at chinradio.com, and we're also available at thegaelichour.ca. My email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca, and if you want to contact me, you can go on the website and fill out a form there. We do have a playlist up there with the music that we play on the show, and we also have a calendar which lists some of the events that are coming up. And there is a host of events starting up again in the new year. And a little later on the new year, on Mondays, you can learn Irish dancing and Irish language classes being held over at Blessed Sacrament of 194 4th Avenue, and they're under the auspices of Cultus Cultori Éireann. And every Tuesday between 11 and 2, the Irish Society sponsor a seniors drop-in, and that's at St. Margaret Mary's at Sunnyside and Fairburn. And on Wednesdays, there's set dance classes with Cultus at 1026 Baseline Road in Nepean. Don't forget, between Wednesday and Saturday, every week, between at 9 o'clock live from the Irish Village or the Heart and Crown on Preston, live music. And I'm very grateful to the support I receive from the Irish Village, which enables this programme to stay broadcasting. On January 4th, if you want to go and do some Irish dancing, there is a Ceilidh over at Montgomery Legion Hall, and that's at 330 Kent Street. And I think that should be well worth going over to. But we're going to open the show tonight with local artist Bobby Watt and his version of Westling Winds.
Now westling winds and slaughtering guns bring autumn's pleasant weather. The moorcock springs on whirring wings among the blooming heather. Now waving grain wide o'er the plain delights the weary farmer, and the moon shines bright as I rove by night to muse upon my charmer. The patrick loves the fruitful fells, the plover loves the mountains, the woodcock haunts the lonely dells, the soaring hern the fountains. Through lofty groves the cushat roves, the path of man to shun it. The hazel bush o'erhangs the thrush, the spreading thorn the linnet. Thus every kind their pleasure find, the savage and the tender. Some social join and leagues combine, some solitary wander. Avant away the cruel sway, tyrannic man's dominion. The sportsman's joy, the murdering cry, the fluttering gory pinion. But Peggy dear, the evening's clear, thick flies the skimming swallow. The sky is blue, the fields in view, all fading green and yellow. Come let us stray our gladsome way and view the charms of nature. The rustling corn, the fruited thorn, and ilk a happy creature. We'll gently walk and sweetly talk while the silent moon shines clearly. I'll clasp thy waist and fondly pressed swear how I loo thee dearly. Not vernal showers to budding flowers, not autumn to the farmer, so dear can be as thou to me, my fair, my lovely charmer.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron, and I am out on Hunt Club Road in the opulent surroundings of Hugh Boyle at Zoom Airlines. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Hugh.
Welcome, yeah.
Hugh, New Year's Eve, we're on the 31st of December, and this I know is a very important day for the Scots, and we have to start this. This is the Gaelic Hour, and we do embrace the Scots in the Gaelic family. But before we talk about, because I want to talk about Hogmanay, where are you from here?
From Belshill in Scotland, which is in Strathclyde area, probably about 30 minutes from Glasgow.
And growing up, was it a rural or was it an urban?
It is pretty urban place to grow up in Belshill, a very industrial place, steelworks, that sort of thing around there.
Right. So when you were growing up, what would have been the type of things that were interesting you that may have ultimately colored your direction in life?
lots of things, but Hogmanay in particular is a very, very important, and in fact much more important when I was a child than Christmas, for example.
Right.
Shops sometimes open in Christmas, but Hogmanay, everything closed down. The 1st of January, there was a total close down. Everybody was just recovering from a hangover. There was no question of anything happening, no papers produced, no shops opening. There was just nothing happened on New Year's Day.
Let's keep that. Let's not steal the thunder here yet.
Yeah, okay.
But from a schooling point of view and things like that, did you play rugby or were you into soccer?
It was football, as it is called there. Yeah, it was the only thing that really was played at our school. Kids were kicking balls around in the street. If you had a field with most things, a bit of green, you put your jacket down and made a goal, and all the children did play a lot more in the streets then, and it was common to be running around, hanging around streets rather than going to a leisure centre as they have today. They weren't around, so
life wasn't as complicated.
No, certainly not. Things were very, very different then. Television probably didn't finished at 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock, and you got the national anthem come on or whatever, and it was only maybe one channel. I don't think ITV just come on then, so there was two channels, and they weren't on all day, so it wasn't like television. There was no daytime television or no nighttime television. It was just evening television.
So would you say even as a teenager or whatever, were you an entrepreneur?
Was I an entrepreneur then?
Yeah.
I grew up, my father was a grocer, he had a shop in Belshill, and so I was always around things, business as it were.
Right.
I remember my father giving me some money to go and buy newspapers and sell them at the church on a Sunday with people coming out, and make some money, and sell bread rolls and Sundays as well, and do things like that. So I think business was sort of around me all the time, and it was just something that you was just brought up with, that you would be in business or do business or try and make some money.
I know that from my own upbringing, that one of the things that I think that may have been is that in growing up in that environment, you understand the relationship aspect of business and who people are.
Yeah, I think so. I think you probably understand it's not as complicated as it may make out to be.
Right.
In very basic terms, you know, try and buy something and sell it for a little bit more, and that's and you're left with a profit. You know, it's in very, very simple, straightforward sort of ideas. And I think when they're invested in you, know, as a small child, I think you carry them through for the rest of your life.
So after you, when you were set free to earn your own living at the beginning, what did you do, or where did you go?
Well, I went to be a chef. That's what I trained as. So I at a school at 15, much to my father's annoyance that I didn't stay on and do things. And at that time, you could leave school at 15, and I think the year later they raised the age to 16. Went off to be a chef and did some training for 3 years, and felt that I always wanted to eat. My mother's cooking was so bad, as Scottish food normally was, that it was a good thing to do, to taste and make some good food. You know, I'd probably never seen many green vegetables as a child, and things like that. It was very basic fried food, and that was what you got. Wholesome as it may have been on occasions. So I basically went to a chef, and then after I qualified as a chef, I went to work in Spain.
Okay.
Scotland's very well known for everybody leaving Scotland. You know, everywhere in the world you go, Scots turn up. Australia, Canada here, whatever. And it's interesting that the population never actually increased in the whole 20th century. There was 5 million in 1900, and when the millennium finished, there was still 5 million there. So I guess there was a few born, so there's as many leaving as were being born. And I think for the first time now, the population is actually increasing. People are not leaving quite such droves.
Right. And of course, Scotland didn't experience a real decline in population either, stable.
Yeah, it's been very stable, right. All of it, right.
So how did you find the Spanish experience after growing up in Scotland?
It was very, very different. And you have to understand that at that point in time, communications were very difficult. Mm-hmm. I remember phoning my mother on her birthday, and you had to phone the operator, who would phone you back to connect the transatlantic call. So you would make a call for 2 hours' time, and she would phone you back and say your call's now available. And then you couldn't hear a thing. There was so much crackling down the line, and it cost you about a day's salary for 3 minutes. It was very, very expensive, not very good. And we don't think today, when we just pick up the phone and we dial all over the world, and very, very cheaply. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost is so, so little. It's less than it was 30, 40 years ago. It's just quite incredible how that is revolutionary change. Obviously, no satellite television, no DVDs. DVDs were just coming in. Not DVDs, but the VHSRs were just coming in, they weren't them. So your communication with Scotland or your homeland was very limited.
We're still back to dear mom and the weekly letters.
That's right. So that's right. So you were forced to get your pen out and send off a letter. And obviously the choice of food and things that you had was different, because of different culture. They didn't quite have a Marks and Spencer's you could go down to and buy some food.
Did you have to feel, or did you learn Spanish?
I did learn Spanish, because I had no alternative. The restaurant I worked in, there was nobody speaking English.
So you're a fluent Spanish speaker?
Pretty much can speak Spanish fairly well, yeah.
Right. So after Spain, what did you do? Where did you go?
I left there after a few years, and it was during the Spanish time. The country was under a dictatorship of Franco, so you have to remember it was a police state, and mm-hmm. that made life a little different as well. It wasn't quite the free society as we were used to in Scotland. But I left it after a couple of years, because I felt like if I didn't leave, I'd be there forever, and I wanted to. And I went to London to work, mm-hmm. and I worked in a few hotels in London. And then I worked as a private chef to an industrialist who brought all sorts of politicians to lunch, and Margaret Thatcher many times came, and I cooked there for another year and a half. And then I left there and went between jobs, because at that time you could leave a job and get another one, it wasn't such a big deal. And I went to work with my brother in travel, just helping him out to send out some leaflets, promotions, little things in the mail, and ended up staying there.
So what year was that?
Wow. Now, what year would that be?
That would have been the late 70s.
Yeah, it would be mid-70s. Mid-70s,
yeah. So, and of course, at that time, the travel industry was so different from the way it is today.
Absolutely. There was no low-cost carriers. There was charter flights going. But it was mainly package tours, and the package tour industry was in its infancy. It was just starting, just about to get underway. People were just beginning to book the packages that we know about now, and of course that's all changed now. That it has gone by the board in the main, and people are now doing their own thing, buying flights and accommodation.
Well, we'll take a break here, and you are listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM, and we're talking to Hugh Boyle, who is the Chief Executive Officer and major stakeholder in Zoom Airlines and Go Travel Direct, and we'll be back after this piece of music.
It was on a fine and a pleasant day, out the Yarmouth Harbour I was faring, as the cabin boy on a sailing lugger, for to go and hunt the shoals o' herring. Although work was hard and the hours were long, and the treatment sure it took some bearing, there was little kindness and the kicks were many, as we hunted for the shoals o' herring. Well, we fished the swath and the broken bank. I was cook and I had a quarter sharing, and they used to sleep standing on my feet, and I'd dream about the shoals o' herring. Left our home ground in the month of June, and the canny shields we sent were bearing, weigh 100 grand, or the silver darling that we'd taken from the shoals o' herring. Now you're up on deck, you're a fisherman, you can swear and show a manly bearing, take your down on watch with the other fellas while you're searching for the shoals o' herring. In the stormy seas and the living gales, just to earn your daily bread, you're daring, from the Dover Straits to the Faroe Islands, as you're following the shoals o' herring. I earned me keep and I paid my way, and I even earned the gear I'm wearing, sailed 1,000,000 miles, caught 10,000,000 fishes, we were sailing after shoals o' herring. I've been following the shoals o' herring.
This is Austin Cummerton on the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM, and if you are detecting a Scottish flavour to the night's programme, you are indeed correct, because that there was ICCOS with Shoals of Herring, and of course Bobby Watt, who opened the show tonight, is a member of ICCOS also. We will be back with you after these messages.
patio is gone. But don't worry, the fire is blazing at the Irish Village in the Bywood Market and the Heart and Crown on Preston Street. Catch the game at Mother McGinty's or the Slug or Roisin Dubh in the Bywood Market. For real Irish warmth, great food and traditional hospitality, music and song from Wednesday to Saturday. The Irish Village Bywood Market and the Heart and Crown on Preston Street. It can only be the Irish Village.
Listen to Chin's China Radio International to win. Tune in to CJLL every evening from 6 to 7. Log on to chinradio.com, click on the Listen to Win tab, and let us know what you think of CRI for your chance to win great weekly prizes and to qualify for a grand prize trip for two to an all-exclusive five-star Sol Milia resort in Cuba, valued at over $5,000. Listen to Win, November 5th through January 11th.
The Adelaide is a distinctive one- and two-bedroom rental apartment complex located at Preston Square. The Adelaide is exactly where you want to be, close to downtown, easy access to the Queensway and just a short journey to the airport. A short walk from Dowes Lake and the experimental farm, you can experience rural living in the heart of the city. The Adelaide is a smart building incorporating state-of-the-art security and environmental systems. Call for an appointment, weekday, nighttime and weekend viewings. 613-230-1500.
Tune in to the Gaelic Garage, Chin 97.9 FM.
December 31st would not be complete if you're in Scotland, around Hogmanay, without hearing from Jimmy Shand. And here we have Step Wee Gaelic. This is the Gaelic Garage on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cummerton. Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM. And we're talking to Hugh Boyle out in his office here on Hunt Club. We will be talking about Hogmanay later on. But we were talking about the start of the travel boom that occurred in the late 70s, where package tours started to really take off and Europe and holidays became a way of life for a lot of people. And that was when you really got into the travel industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a time when, Spain was opening up and these destinations weren't readily available to the mass market. And I think what happened there was charter airlines appeared and they put packages together with accommodation that became really accessible to the masses to be able to go away. It was, you know, maybe a month's salary to go away and have a two-week vacation in Spain or Greece or Yugoslavia, as it was then, was a popular destination. So it changed a lot, and it was the growth of that industry over the late 70s, early 80s was phenomenal. The amount of people that were going, and many people were going for more than once a year, and it just changed the way that we travelled and the way we did things.
So you would say you were probably fortunate to be in the right place at the right time?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's always in business. You need to be in the right place in the right time and have a little bit of luck and then drive that forward and make it work for you. And we had a small business, my brother and I, and we then sold it to a public company. And public company, we worked with them for maybe 10 years after that, and it became First Choice. That's okay. Who's known today, which is one of the largest tour operators in the UK. I think it's the second largest in the UK. And it was a time when it was easy because things were developing, there was pent up demand for travel, and so we had to keep that going and make sure we were dealing with all the different sectors. Retired people in the winter were going away more for the first time, it was new to them. Young people were traveling, who'd just taken on work in their early 20s and things. So it was right across the spectrum. They were trying to make sure that you could deal with every sector of the community to send them abroad and fill up your planes.
Of all the industries that are out there, I would think the travel industry must be ranked way up there when it comes to difficulties, because you're dealing with a customer that has a high expectation.
Mm-hmm.
For as little or as small amount of cost as possible. Mm-hmm. And the external factors in the form of the hotel that they're in or the food that they may have or a variety of other things oftentimes can be subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaint level on something like that can be very high, I'm sure.
Yeah, at the beginning, certainly, it was very bad. Quality was just not there. Hotels in Spain were growing like mushrooms. People were arriving in hotels before they weren't finished. The infrastructure wasn't quite that. They had chefs didn't know what to cook for foreign tourists. They were giving the wrong food and doing all that. And that was a difficult time for the industry as a whole. I think it was a great learning curve to understand what the passengers wanted and how they could supply it at a cheap price. And probably it grew too fast, too quickly, had a lot of complaints and got a very bad name at that time. And the name has kept with it for a long time. It's still, people go, package tours, we don't go on them. And the reality is that it's completely changed now because you can go on what you want, mm-hmm. and where you want, and there's obviously different qualities and standards set now. And of course the European Union have made a lot of legislation to make sure the standards are maintained. Swimming pools have markings on them, how deep they are, there's fire extinguishers and hotels. In those early days, certainly safety wasn't like it was mm-hmm. today, or it is today. So it changed a lot, and partly through legislation, partly through customers making sure they get what they want.
You retired from that company at some stage a number of years ago. And as I understand it, you decided to retire to a quiet life in Ottawa.
Well, that's, you're absolutely right. In 1997, I sold a company that I was working at that time to one of the large public companies in the UK. And I really didn't have to probably work again, no need to work, but I had two young daughters and I wanted to try somewhere different, and I was living in London at the time, and London's a very harsh city to deal with. It's a great city to party, it's got a lot of theatres, a lot of good restaurants, but it has its challenges in getting around and doing things, and the air is not that fresh in one thing or another. So we decided to move lock, stock and barrel to Ottawa.
Mm.
And come here with my wife had a sister here, so it was something that basically we'd been many times and we liked it. We liked the cleanliness of the place. We liked Canadians. We thought it was a great place to be. There was no real language issues here. And so in 1997 we came here and I came to retire. Didn't quite last that long. I think about a year and a half, 2 years, when two things happened. One, I realised that I was then at that stage in my mid to late 40s, that I should really do something, because I can't just not work mm-hmm. at all. And I clearly went out and I saw a lot of opportunities that were here. The first one was package holidays, a business that I knew very well. And what was interesting in Canada, the internet was still in the UK, only 20% of the population had connections, and very few people had broadband. Mm. It was dial-up connections, it was far behind. But when I came to Canada, I was surprised how far advanced Canada was in the amount of people that had connection to broadband, and they were using it a lot. But there was no direct cell tour operators in Canada. They didn't exist. All tour operating was sold through travel agents.
Mm-hmm.
And direct cell in the UK and in Europe was quite a large percentage of the market. And I believed at that time the internet would change the way that we would book things, the way that we could see things and sell. So I saw this opportunity to set up a holiday company, which was called Go Travel Direct, which was here in Ottawa, and that did that in the year 2000. We set it up.
What kind of challenges were you presented with, given what you just said? Because you were dealing with an industry that was probably very traditional at that stage.
Absolutely. Well, we got a very hostile reception from the travel industry in general, because we were challenging the method in which they booked their vacations, and we were trying to tell people not to necessarily go to the travel agent. They could book directly with us online, and they could, or they could come and see us. That became a major issue. All the travel agents ganged up on the tour operators and refused to sell to any hotels that deal with us. And in fact, to this day, there is still an ongoing investigation by the Complaints Commission in Canada to deal with some unfair practices that took place during that time. But one of the other issues, apart from getting a limited number of hotels, was airlines. No airline would sell us seats. The only airline that would work with us was First Air here in Ottawa. But we tried at that time Canada 3000, who are no longer with us. They wouldn't sell us seats. We tried Transat. They wouldn't sell us seats. We tried Royal Airways. They wouldn't sell us seats because they were frightened that the competition would go against us. And for that reason, we set up Zoom Airlines to fly the passengers down south.
Right.
So it was a challenge that we didn't see when we didn't realise it'd be so vigorous in the way that they would do things. But clearly the internet has changed things,
mm-hmm.
Not just for holidays but for travel in general. I mean, 10 years ago, how many people were booking their flights to Toronto via the travel agent? I mean, how many people do that now? I guess it's a very, very small percentage. So everybody's online. It's a system in which they're used to doing it. And of course, it's great because there's low cost of distribution. You get e-tickets, saves a lot of money. You get information that's up to date. You're printing a brochure, to be honest, goes out of date very
mm-hmm.
quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Hotels change, you can put on new things. So, and it's something that's been endorsed by the public because it's not only a very effective way to do it, it is a good way to do it.
Having to go out and buy planes in a volatile market, well, starting off where you weren't, you were challenging the system, and where oil prices fluctuate at some horrendous rates at times, that also represents a tremendous risk factor. Like, I would think that would have been enough in a lot of cases to stop things happening.
Yeah, it many people regarded it as a terrible time to start an airline just after 9/11 when nobody was flying. But in reality, it was a good time because there was lots of planes available, there was cheaply, there was plenty of pilots, there was plenty of infrastructure around to build an airline. And I believe that, and still today, that people will travel more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, we have more leisure time, we have more disposable income to spend on leisure travel. With that in mind, people will continue to travel and get away. And with the Canadian winters that we have here, I don't think everybody wants to stay at home. They all want to get a bit of sunshine, and I think that will continue to happen. So I believe that although it was going through a difficult time in a few years, it would move on and change.
When you started out going to catering school, do you ever think you'd be running an airline in the travel business?
I still wake up every day, can't believe that I run an airline. I go to airports and see my planes in them, and I go, gosh, that's my plane sitting there.
Yeah.
As I did last week in Scotland, I was sitting in Glasgow Airport with my two daughters, I was coming back from flying down to London, where I was in Stirling University that day, and came down to London, and a plane landed, and my daughter went, "Look, Dad, there's one of your planes." And I went, "Oh, yeah, so it is." I didn't know the plane was going in there at that time or doing it, and it still is amazing. I'm still very, very pleased and happy, and I'm very lucky that it's turned out the way that it's turned out.
You have been awarded numerous recognitions, or recognition, you've been recognized by numerous organizations here and I know elsewhere, and I can't list them, but of the ones that have happened recently, what would you say has been the most that has got to you most?
Well, I think a few weeks ago I got awarded an honorary doctorate from Stirling University, which I'm particularly proud of, you know, as for someone who left school at 15 and had a limited education at that time, certainly at 15 and not doing any further education, to get a doctorate, an honorary doctorate at the was a very proud moment. Mm-hmm. For me, for that one, certainly. Mm-hmm.
And if you were to give some business advice to somebody who may not be academically inclined, because oftentimes the education system tries to box people into channels, and that if you don't have the academic bent, it can often be a challenge. What advice would you give to somebody in that scenario?
It's a difficult one, but I think you have to do a few things. I think you have to listen to people, take advice of people who have tried it. You know, one of the big problems in businesses, all businesses are a learning curve. It's from you start it to you finish it. They never turn out the way that you thought they were going to turn out. I started a holiday company, and never in my wildest dream did I think of an airline. But what was born out of the holiday company was an airline. And you have to go with it. You have to believe in what you're doing, but you have to listen to people to find out what's going on. Try and do as much research as you can about the product. Find out who your competition are, and see if you can do it better than them or cheaper than them. What can you do different that they are doing? Because at the end of the day, if you're just doing exactly the same as everybody else, then it'll be more difficult to be successful. It doesn't necessarily mean you can produce something cheaper, but you can be able to sell it better. Your mm-hmm. selling skill, mm-hmm. your quality can be better. But you have to have a unique selling proposition.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM, and we will be back talking to Hugh Boyle about Hug Money after this piece of music.
And be the nation again that stood against him. Proud Edward's army, and send him homeward to think again.
And welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chain 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. We're talking about Hogmanay with Hugh Boyle. And Hugh is the principal of Zoom Airlines and Go Travel Direct. And certainly, and Hogmanay in Scotland would be very different than the 31st of December in Ottawa or the 31st of December for anyone who's holidaying in the south. Hogmanay, what's it all about?
Well, I don't know where it all came about, but obviously in Scotland it's a much bigger holiday than Christmas. I think, you know, it's a great time. One of the important things I have to say that in Hogmanay, if you're Scottish, is that you're with your parents at 12 o'clock on that stroke of the so it's not about going out to a party, it's about being home. You have to be home. When I was a child, your parents wouldn't care if you went out after that or before that, but you had to be home at 12 o'clock. It was an important ritual, spiritual ritual, to be there at 12 o'clock as to bring in the bells, and everybody would like to be it. Then everybody would do that, and 10 minutes later, everybody would go into everybody else's houses and say hi and wish them Happy New Year and go down the house. So it's an experience that I thought was normal until I left Scotland and realised that it wasn't normal at all. It only happened in Scotland quite soon.
So you used your first foot?
First foot. I do when I can with my neighbours. Go in and see them depending on where I am and what I'm doing.
So explain first foot. First footing.
Well, first footing is just after with the bells. They bring in the new year on the stroke of it. You wish everybody there Happy New Year and having a party. Then you'll go out your house and you'll go into your neighbour's house or anybody in the street, and you'll go around. You take a drink with you, normally whiskey, obviously, but not necessarily, can be whatever. And you're supposed to take some bread and some coal.
Okay.
The bread is a symbol of food, and you're bringing, welcoming them with some bread. Probably today it's a tin of Walker shortbread or something, but it traditionally should have been bread.
Home baked, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the coals for warmth, just to give warmth that you give them, your neighbour. And that's what you're doing. And you'll try to be the first person through that threshold after 12 o'clock. So if you've got a street, you might visit 10, 15, 20 people before you go to bed that night, having visited them all. I had a little drink in each one, and because they'll offer you a drink, and you offer them a drink, and so it's quite a long process.
So in a very much building community and relationship.
Yeah, it's very, very much. I mean, the whole, everybody, the stroke of 12, no matter where you are. And I remember a friend of mine, he was on a bus at the time, and he was late in getting home and was trying to get home, and the weather had been bad, and at 12 o'clock the bus just stopped, and the bus driver got out some drink and gave everybody some drink because it was 12 o'clock. And you know, to think of a bus driver drinking whiskey when driving everybody home and stopping giving a drink is probably pretty absurd these days, but that is the sort of thing that happened.
Right. Memories of times like that, does it still happen? Has television changed that? Is more.
I think things have changed in the way communities have been together, and people are not so close as they were in those days. I think people didn't have very much. The little that you did have, you shared, and if somebody had a problem, you shared it with them. I have to say that I think that's completely changed now, and it's not. And these were, individuals being a family together to bring things together, rather than today. There's families that are obviously helping each other, but it wasn't quite like that then. It was communities helping each other, and streets were very close together. Housing was very close together. People were brought much closer together. Mm-hmm. It's a very different changed world, I think, today.
If you were to say there was any Scot that you admire, who might that be?
that's a good one. Well, there's a lot of Scots. I mean, I'm always fascinated that Scots are everywhere, and you hear about them, and here in Canada, I mean, I live in New Edinburgh, it is Scotland, coincidentally, yeah. I might add, just off Mackay Street, coincidentally, as well. But, Canada has got a lot to be thankful for Scots. I mean, the Bank of Montreal, McGill University, all started by Scotsmen. Indeed, the first Prime Minister and the second Prime Minister is Scottish. So we offered a lot. I don't think there's one that I would put on a pedestal and say. I think they all contributed a lot to the development of the Western world and rolling it out.
Right. Hugh Boyle. 31st of December, Hogmanay. Happy Hogmanay, and thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to me, and I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you very much, Austin. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Gaelic Hour on 97.9 FM with Austin Cummerton, and earlier on there we heard the Alexander Brothers with Flora Scotland, and we have Eddie Reader and Auld Lang Syne to go out on tonight. This programme is available on the web and will be up as an archive later on in the week. That's at thegaelichour.ca. And we also have a playlist listing the music that we play here on the show. If you do want to reach me, my email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca. And do come back and join me again tomorrow night, New Year's Day, when we have a fresh batch of music as we ring in the new year in every way. So get out there and party. Get ready to go. You've got just over an hour to get yourself all wound up and find some mistletoe and say Happy New Year. So until tomorrow night, slán go fóill.
Should all the acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all the acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup o' kindness yet for the sake of auld lang syne. We twa ran up with the grace and put the gowans fine. We've wandered many's a weary fence since auld lang syne. Yeah. Surely.